As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And welcome to the Total Soccer Show. My name is Taylor Rockwell. It feels good to say that introduction again. With me today to preview the USA's upcoming World Cup qualifier with Jamaica is a man who, I have to say, basically committed podcast adultery last week. It's Joe Lowry. Hello, Joseph.
Oh no, Taylor, what did I do?
I mean, I turn on the show with you and Tom, which was great. It was a great conversation. But if people haven't heard it, y'all broke down the US roster for these upcoming games. The episode began with Joe just lumping in praise for Tom's facial hair. I'm not going to lie, it was hard to hear a man with a beard having to sit there and listen to his podcast partner talk about another person's facial hair, the good chemistry, the good banter. I don't know how I felt about it.
So you're feeling threatened, Taylor, is really the reality here at this point. I'm sorry, Taylor, your spot is always safe. What I did want to ask you, though, is How was vacation? I think you talked about it maybe a little bit on the weekend review. Yeah. I still haven't gone all the way through that show. But how was vacation? How was breaking into Soccer House? How was all that stuff?
We avoided Soccer House, so the cover story goes. It was really nice. We saw some friends in Kansas City. We saw my mom and some family out on the West Coast, and that was really nice. We took Reverie to Yosemite, and I managed to not drop her in the middle of a river and not drop her from a mountain, which I was terrified about. I already have sort of a fear of heights. And I definitely, when Margaret, my wife, had our daughter strapped to her as we were at a scenic overlook, I just kept being like, she can't crawl out of that, right? I was the paranoid parent for that one, which is not who I usually am. But I guess when it comes to heights, that's who I am. So I'm excited to not be on top of mountains or in any elevated position as we have this conversation, Joe. I'm nervous enough. I don't need heights to accentuate that.
No, that's true. And I do not have kids, and I would like to someday. I also have a moderate fear of heights currently, and adding a small being who is somewhat mobile to that whole situation does not sound particularly ideal. Well played on your part for getting out of that with the three people that you came with.
It's such a like lunatic brain thing for me that I'm not even like necessarily just afraid of heights. Like I have got no problem flying, but it's just when I'm on top of something and my brain is like, you know, you could jump over this if you wanted to. It's right there that I suddenly become very, very nervous. And then I do create ridiculous scenarios, as I talked about yesterday. I used to be terrified of going across long bridges because I was convinced that Godzilla would come through and destroy the bridge. I was like 12 at the time, but still, active imagination is both good and bad, is I guess what I'm saying.
Oh, I mean, it keeps things interesting, Taylor, to say the least.
It does. So let's see if we can keep things interesting by talking about this game against Jamaica that the U.S. men's national team has coming up. I said I was nervous earlier. I'm not sure if I am, but I'm not sure if I'm not. So we'll see how we go with this one. But Joe, we've got three games coming up for World Cup qualifying, starting with Jamaica this Thursday, October 7th. Coverage begins at 7:30 Eastern on ESPN2, Univision, and TUDN. Again, 7:30 coverage means it could be 7:35 kickoff. It could be 8:07 kickoff, anywhere in there. You never know for sure. Then Sunday, we're away to Panama. Wednesday, we are home to Costa Rica for U.S. national team games. I guess I say we, and I'm fine with that one, but we've got the schedule in place. USA, Jamaica. Joe, we're going to talk about the United States, the roster, some lineups. I know you and Tom have already done plenty of that. Plenty of that. But first, we're going to talk about Jamaica. So we both watched some footage. Let's start with the roster, Joe, and maybe a potential lineup. Just some names that jumped out to you when you saw the squad. Who are some of the bigger names? Who are the ones that maybe you wrote down as a potential threat or a potential opportunity?
Sure. Yeah, I've got Andre Blake in goal to start this whole situation. He has been one of the best goalkeepers in Major League Soccer this season in terms of shot stopping. And he's a guy, much like Matt Turner, who can change games with his shot stopping ability. And for Jamaica to have him in net, even though he wasn't able to keep a lot of goals out in the first World Cup qualifying window, that I don't necessarily think that blame belongs on his shoulders. He's a guy who can stop a lot of shots, and he's a player who the U.S. are going to have to be very wary of in net. So Andre Blake, the Union's goalkeeper in Major League Soccer, is a key guy for me. Kamar Lawrence as well was another one. Left back, started against the U.S. He started against the U.S. a bunch in the past. He plays for Toronto in Major League Soccer, had a stint in Europe, and before that he was with the New York Red Bulls in MLS as well. He's a real threat at left back. He can bomb up that left side. He often provides width in that left midfielder for Jamaica. They usually play a four at the back shape. That left midfielder, whoever that player is, will often cut inside or at least just tuck inside and play in the half space, and they have a nice little left-sided combination there. Kamar Lawrence is a player to watch. And then there's a lot of UK-based players on this roster.
Yeah.
And Taylor, you and I have talked about that before. We talked about some of the reasoning behind that, Jamaica making this real dual national push. There's a number of different guys that are worth watching that are UK-based here. Mikel Antonio is a big name, probably the biggest name on this entire squad, West Ham striker in the Premier League. He's been very good for West Ham so far this season. Not so good for Jamaica in his first ever cap for them last window against Panama, I believe. But he's a guy that the U.S. is certainly going to have to pay really close attention to up top.
Yeah, no disagreement here. I would add Alvis Powell, who I would assume would be starting at right back in that back four. Those two, Lawrence and Powell, do seem to be very involved in Jamaica's more promising attacking opportunities. Getting forward, getting wide, getting in crosses. And in a lot of the games I saw, the person who seemed most intent on getting on the end of those crosses was Shamar Nicholson, who could start up top in a kind of more conventional number nine role, though I doubt he wears number nine, but he is an aerial threat, but can also kind of bring that ball down and then lay it off to late arriving runners. So the United States probably want to limit service from out wide to the extent they can. I would guess we're going to get some combination of Devin Williams and Daniel Johnson as your kind of two more central, more defensive-minded midfielders, not necessarily saying they will be sitting at home, because I think Jamaica can do a couple different things. And Bobby DiCordova-Reed was the other name that stood out to me. Could start up top alongside Mikel Antonio, potentially. Can play as more of a number 10 in a 4-2-3-1, but can cause problems regardless of where he's playing. So we've got some names, Joe, that we want to keep an eye on, that we want to sort of make sure the United States are dealing with appropriately. But let's look at Jamaica as a whole for a moment. You mentioned we expect them to be in a back four. To my mind, there are like three-ish different looks that Jamaica could bring out based on what we've seen them do in World Cup qualifying so far. Worth noting, their World Cup qualifying campaign has not started strongly. 1 point from three games, they're bottom of the CONCACAF table right now. But Joe, I've got sort of three looks, all with a back four. What about you?
Yeah, so Jamaica is a really versatile team because they have a lot of individual talent. They are one of the most talented teams, I would argue, in CONCACAF. But the issue right now for manager Theodore Whitmore is that the players just haven't had much time to play together, right?
Yeah.
In the last World Cup qualifying window, they called in a 35-man squad because there was issues with a lot of the UK-based players traveling over to North and Central America to play. And so eventually those players did get in. But in the first game that they had in that window, they had they had obviously 11 starters, but from that first game to the next game, they had eight different players changing in that roster. So it's an evolving squad. They had eight of those UK-based guys start in the second game of the window that didn't start in the first game, and then some of those guys didn't start in the third game either. It's been very fluid for Whitmore right now, and I sympathize with the challenges that come with trying to get players closer together and build that chemistry that happens on and off the field. Jamaica just haven't had a lot of time to do that yet. As far as how they play, there's so much talent. And for me, Taylor, a lot of what Jamaica do comes down to individuality and trying to take advantage of individual matchups. They don't have this really concrete possession style of play. They'll play in a four at the back shape, usually a 4-4-2, as far as I've seen it, but sometimes that shape changes and it becomes more of a 4-1-4-1 or a 4-5-1 defensively. So it is fluid to an extent. But it's about absorbing pressure defensively. They absorbed a ton of pressure against Mexico, or at least they tried to, and they did similar things against Panama and Costa Rica. But they will step forward. They will press. They will try to win the ball. And when they get the ball back, it's really vertical for Jamaica. They win the ball, and they try to go aggressively and take advantage of Mikel Antonio dropping in to hold the ball up and then send runners off of him. They try to find Bobby Reed, who you mentioned, Taylor, who can get on the ball and create a little bit. It's not really patient. From Jamaica, it's much more direct, it's vertical, it's more Red Bullian than it is like Manchester City, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No arguments here at all with the way they want to attack. I saw, Joe, tell me where you are on this one. I saw them having three different approaches to that defensive side of things. I saw them being sort of open, and like a lot of the problems we used to see from the United States when they would go with that 4-4-2 mid block, when Jamaica were in a 4-4-2 or a 4-2-3-1, 4-1-4-1 sometimes, regardless, when they're set up at midfield, it seems to be a little bit more static and a little bit more standoffish. And so ball playing center backs or a sort of number six who gets on the ball and is confident could really open them up and find lots of space. So what seemed to be more successful against Mexico when they were away to Mexico in World Cup qualifying, still a 2-1 loss, but played them like neck and neck for a good long while, was sitting much, much deeper into a low block 4-4-2, everybody back, and then trying to counter pretty aggressively. That would be the second look. The third that I didn't quite remember, but went back, read my notes, watched some of the footage, was in the Gold Cup game versus the United States. Matthew Hoppe gets the late winner with the header. But so many of my notes were about how aggressive Jamaica was in their press and how often they stepped and made the United States uncomfortable. And that seemed to work pretty well for them. So though the 4-4-2 like deep block probably frustrates the United States more and sort of accentuates problems that exist in the U.S. team that we saw the last window, we've seen Jamaica have success with the more high-intensity press, the more aggressive step. My guess would be that they'll end up trying to kind of split the difference and do both at different points. But Joe, coming from a United States perspective, which would you rather see them do? Which would you prefer to see them do if you want the United States to get the win, which I'm assuming that you do?
If you're Greg Berhalter, you want Jamaica to press you, right? You want them to step forward and leave some space between their lines, or at least this is my perspective here, because think back to that Canada game, Taylor, the second World Cup qualifier. Canada sat back in a 5-4-1 block that shifted and changed into a 4-4-2 at times, but they sat back pretty deep in their own half. They rarely, if ever, pressed, and they made the U.S.'s life miserable. And the U.S. showed in that game that they could not break down a low block. And I don't know why, if you're Jamaica, I don't know why you wouldn't lean into that. I don't know why you wouldn't watch that tape and say, guys, we can replicate this. We can do exactly what Canada did. We can shift laterally. We can compress space. We can try to keep things tight between our lines, limit space in those areas, win the ball, and then attack through our really talented individual attacking players. We can move through the wings. We can have Kamar Lawrence overlap and hit him wide on the left side. We can find Mikel Antonio or Bobby Reed or whoever up top. Junior Flemings is another dangerous attacker for them who plays in USL. There's a lot of talent here that I think is best served when Jamaica's sitting deep and attacking that way. So if you're the U.S., you don't want them sitting deep. You don't want to have to go through the process to break down that block, try to find those slivers of space, break into those space. I mean, that's a hassle. If you're the U.S., I think you're much better suited to a game that has the opposition stepping forward and giving space to you and saying, hey, you just have to go and be able to have the quality to break through and find those spaces when we're extended. If Jamaica's deep, I think the U.S.'s life is going to be a lot harder.
All right. So if I'm making a list of things to keep an eye on, the first one is Jamaica's defensive approach from kickoff from early in the game. The reason why they might not want to go with that more defensive approach is number one, because as I said earlier, they do rely on their fullbacks to create attacking chances and to give them width, but to play those balls in. So you then potentially leave yourself pretty exposed, which is, I believe, how Costa Rica ended up getting their first goal, was Jamaica overcommitting numbers and getting caught on the break. I also think they might not want to do that because there's a decent chance you're starting center backs for this one. For Jamaica are Damian Lowe and Adrian Mariapa. Might be Liam Moore, but if it's not, it's Mariapa, who is currently unattached and is 35 years old, and it's Damian Lowe, who is playing for Al Ittihad. So not the strongest level of competition for either one of them, and I wouldn't say either of them is particularly fleet of foot. So maybe it's Liam Moore, who plays for Reading in England, but if it's Mariapa and Lowe, I think you don't want to risk getting them exposed. So maybe then again, the defensive block makes a bit of sense. If Jamaica do sort of go with a more aggressive pressing approach, I'm assuming that a lot of that would be because of all of the attacking talent they do have. I think of them as sort of weaker in defense, strong in goal, and then getting stronger as we go further towards the U.S. goal, basically.
They have energy in the front line, certainly, to press, right? They have the work rate in a lot of those players to be aggressive and to get in your face. Taylor, one defender I wanted to add, I believe he's on this roster, Ethan Pinnock, Brentford's Ethan Pinnock, yeah. Central defender. He's been pretty good for Brentford, at least in what I've watched of them this season, same last year with them in the championship. He is a guy who I think is probably the best center back on this roster and should start, and he's a threat in the air. So Jamaica do have some talent in the back, and it wouldn't surprise me if we saw Pinnock in this game on Thursday.
Joe. Yeah, that's a great shout. Sorry to interrupt.
No, you're fine.
I failed to note him, but I think Pinnock is also left-footed, and Damian Lowe is right-footed. Damian Lowe is going to start this game, I think, is the captain. I always reference this when we talk about Jamaica, but the clip that exists of him negotiating with the Jamaican FA, and it's just sort of like, nah, we're not doing that, and like he does not back down. The dude has got grit, and so I think he will start. I like Damian Lowe a lot, but you are right that Pinnock does give them a different look and does give them a little bit more speed at the back, so that is a great shout for who could also be back there. Regardless, we're expecting it to be a back five, and we know it will be Kamar Lawrence on one side and Alvis Powell on the other. At least I know that. Joe, are you agreeing with those two?
Yeah, I mean, Kamar Lawrence for sure, and it looks likely that Alvis Powell will start at right back in that back four. So I think we will see Jamaica sit deep. We also will, Taylor, to go back to kind of what we were talking about before, we will see them stepping forward and pressing. Even though they didn't do a lot of that in the first window, based off of that Gold Cup game against the U.S. that you mentioned earlier on in this episode already, and based off of just other moments we've seen from Theodore Whitmore's team, they like to step forward and they like to press because they have the talent to do that. The issue for Jamaica, though, right now is, I think this was the biggest thing that stood out to me from watching all of their film from the first three games, they left so much space between their lines when they pressed. Yeah. They had, at times, these just massive gaps between their back four and their midfield four, or maybe their midfield five, when they pressed, depending on the shape. They would step forward, or even when they were back in their block, Taylor. They lack so much discipline. And this is one of the things that I think is a symptom of the lack of chemistry in this squad. There's massive holes in this team's defensive shape and defensive setup that the U.S. can exploit almost no matter how Jamaica defends. If they're in a low block against Panama, against Costa Rica and Mexico, there were weak points in that low block. If they're in mid block or stepping higher up the field to press, there are going to be weak points there. So that's one thing I'm certainly going to be watching in this game. If Jamaica press, or even if they're deeper, where are the spaces and how effective are the U.S. at finding those spaces? Because Panama could do it, and if Panama can do it, the U.S. needs to be able to do that as well.
I want to talk about a few more potential opportunities for the United States that Jamaica could present, but first I want to take a moment to hear from today's sponsors.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Welcome back. Joe, I was debating whether or not that was the good time to take a break. And the reason why I chose to is because you had me sort of on the edge of my seat. I was feeling optimistic. It seems like there are some opportunities for the United States. Let's keep going with that. What are the things you spotted in watching Jamaica that you think the U.S. could really capitalize upon? You talked a little bit about the gaps in the space between the lines. That seemed to be a pretty ever-present thing from their last four or so games.
It absolutely is, Taylor. And I do think it's worth going just a beat longer on that idea. There's space between the midfield line and the defensive line for Jamaica. Same with the forward line and the midfield line. Jamaica oftentimes will defend with that front two, but they don't apply, or at times they don't apply a ton of pressure on the other team's build-up unit. And by that, I mean the center backs and the goalkeeper. And if it is Matt Turner, he's not really an asset with his feet, in my view. But the center backs can be, even without John Brooks, who is not going to be in this camp. He withdrew. So it's likely going to be Miles Robinson and someone else. Tim Ream's also not in this camp. So it's a somewhat reduced center back core. I hope it's Chris Richards in that center back group alongside Miles Robinson. But whoever those two center backs are, they're likely going to have at least some time and space on the ball to kickstart attacks and play through midfield, find a winger dropping in. There are opportunities there for the U.S. to build and find and exploit those gaps in possession, but there's also opportunities for them to do it in an uglier way, maybe a less aesthetically pleasing way. You don't have to exploit that space with the ball on the ground and with this beautiful possession play. You can also find it with second balls, right? If you play a long ball up to Ricardo Pepi or up to Tim Weah or whoever, right? And maybe you're trying to find Weston McKennie, who's making a run into that forward line. You can find those players, have them chest the ball down, and that space is still there, right? You can play more direct. You can try to fight for those 50-50 balls, or maybe they're 70-30 balls if you've done your hold-up play, right? You can fight for those second chances in more attacking spaces still in front of Jamaica's back line, win possession there, and then go again, and you've done that field advancing work. So you can do it in a couple of different ways, and I think the U.S. maybe doesn't necessarily have the ability right now from what we've seen in the last window and previously under Greg Berhalter. I don't know that they have the talent and the cohesiveness to play really through those gaps with all this beautiful possession play on a consistent basis. I'd love to be wrong, but even if they don't have that quality possession play ability in their bag right now, they should still be able to find those gaps by playing a bit more direct and winning those 50-50s.
The only thing I will say to that, I think you're absolutely right that if they're going long, we want to see the U.S. fighting and winning those 50-50s or winning those second balls. But in listening to Berhalter talk about what went right and wrong, mostly wanted to talk about what went right. But when he was talking with Bobby Warshaw on their podcast, he talked a lot about how the United States was overly direct and to the point where it seemed like the players were sort of doing that against what he was asking them to do.
Yeah.
And so I kind of kept that in my head thinking about this game. And so maybe we'll see more of that, but it will be more coordinated, organized, and deliberate. But we might also see even more of a focus on ball retention and passing and moving just to show that like they can do it and they can execute the game plan and that is Berhalter's preferred approach. So I'm with you that they could be more direct and there could be more of a plan for that and they could vary it up at times. But if they are going to try to possess and pull Jamaica apart, I think, as you've already said, there are plenty of opportunities there. One specific one I wanted to note is that when Jamaica defend, again, oftentimes it's that sort of 4-4-2. And that oftentimes if you have the outside back for the opponent, I'll go with Jamaica or Mexico for this one. In the Mexico game, when Mexico's right back would advance up the pitch, it was usually Sanchez on the right. That meant that the left-sided midfielder was tracking that runner and Jamaica basically went into a 5-3-2. Which makes sense, except that there's then a ton of space in front of that left side for Jamaica that no one is filling. And if a Mexican player moved there and received the ball, it was then the left midfielder, it was Campbell in that game, who had to step. So it's basically the left midfielder marking the outside fullback, but then also having to step forward to deal with any player on the ball. And I think if the U.S. can find that space and get some overloads on that side, there will be opportunities to sort of have these quick passing combinations and get in behind the defense. But I think really it's going to be relying on the United States being sort of brave in the way they want to pass forward and trying to kind of play the ball 20, 30 yards, maybe into traffic, but then making a lot of runs off the ball so that it's not pass, receive, turn, pass, receive, turn, pass, receive, hold. It's pass, layoff, pass wide, pass back, and suddenly Jamaica are pretty open and there for the taking. I think that would be the way I would like to see the United States go more readily, more often, is that sort of aggressive passing, but not just overly reliant on long direct balls.
I hope we see that too, Taylor, because I really do believe that this Jamaica game could be the perfect opportunity for the U.S. to run out some of those things, right? And to show that they have improved in possession. Because, yeah, there is that possibility that Jamaica could high press like we saw in the Gold Cup. And that makes the U.S.'s life a little bit more difficult in when you're being high pressed inside your own box or inside your own final third or your own defensive third, excuse me. It does make sense at times to play the ball long and try to collect those second balls or just to play a bit more direct. But if Jamaica is sitting off, based off of what we saw from them in September, there's plenty of space to exploit, whether that is with a wide midfielder for Jamaica dropping back into the back line. That then changes their shape and opens up space in other places. When defensive players move, different pockets of space are opened up. That's just how it works, right? And with Jamaica, they do a lot of those wide rotations, dropping players back. They played Corey Burke, who's really a striker. Theodore Whitmore played him as a left-sided midfielder or a right-sided midfielder a lot in the first window. And Corey Burke isn't on this roster, but we could see something similar with a player who maybe isn't a natural wide midfielder and therefore doesn't like to do as much defensive tracking and track back to help that fullback, even if it might be their responsibility to do so. So there's going to be no shortage of opportunities for the U.S. to actually play and find gaps, I think, at least. And you know, if they're not able to do that, that's going to be a bit of a problem if they can't leverage the direct play then as the backup plan. But man, it feels like all of the stars have aligned for this game to be not a possession clinic, because I think that's expecting too much from the U.S. men's national team, but to see them actually pass and move and to see some semblance of what Greg Berhalter's stated vision has been with this team.
I'm glad you mentioned Corey Burke there. He is not on the roster. I think that is due to injury. And I know also that Anthony Grant, who we've seen play as a holding midfielder for Jamaica in the past, also not in this squad due to concussion injuries in England. So they are going to be missing two fairly prominent players, or players who have been prominent for them so far. So Joe, if we do end up seeing Jamaica in a more defensive bunker, what would you like to see the United States do? Or what could an opponent do? Let's keep it generic to start, because I think we kind of hit this when we did our World Cup qualifying shows last time, but I wanted to kind of just go back to it, that playing against a bunkered opponent is really, really difficult, especially if you're doing so at international level where you don't have a ton of time to prep, you don't have a ton of time to practice and drill and work on ways of passing through that. Also, I guess moving away from the generic for a moment, when you're missing Christian Pulisic and Gio Reyna, it makes it that much harder. So what would you like to see the United States do? What would basically, if it's in those first 15 minutes, if Jamaica are sitting in, if it's a 4-4-2, if it's deep, and if they are sort of doing their best to cover that space, what would you like to see from the U.S.? What are some things we could see that would make you feel optimistic, even if we're not getting good goal-scoring opportunities in those first 15?
I want to see quick, but also smart and not rushed ball movement.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah.
I think one thing that's really important in how you break down a block is you have to move the ball to shift the opposition's block, right? At least in most situations. If they're back in a 4-4-2, if Jamaica are back in a 4-4-2, you have to move the ball to force Jamaica to adjust and to give them, to entice them into winning the ball themselves, right? So if you don't move the ball quickly enough, the block really isn't going to be moving and you're not going to be threatening them. So that's the challenge there with ball movement. You need to move it at speed, but you also need to move it wisely. You need to move it into good spots. You can't just move it back and forth between the same two players, right? That's not really accomplishing the goal, even if you move it quickly. Moving the ball laterally from one side and then drawing Jamaica forward, maybe you combine a bit on that side and then you switch it over to the other side. And you either, you know, move it across the back line in some sort of a U shape to the other side, from right to left or whatever the situation is. You do that, or maybe you hit a long diagonal switch out to that side and you play over there, and there's space there because ideally the ball moves faster than the opposition's defensive block. The U.S. will move the ball theoretically faster than Jamaica's block. That's something you want to see. And then as the block starts to split and open up and gets disorganized because all the players cannot move together like robots and move perfectly in sync, there are going to be spaces. Then you find those spaces and play aggressively into the gaps. You find Tim Weah dropping in. You find Brendan Aaronson dropping in. You find Yunus Musa or Luka De La Torre or Weston McKennie or whoever. You find them in central spaces, and that's part of the code. You've partially cracked into the safe at that point. Now you just have to progress the ball forward, and it's not easy to continue once you've gotten the ball into the middle of the block, but at least you've won part of the battle at that point. So we need to see those kinds of things from the U.S. if they want to be breaking Jamaica down, Because, Taylor, they couldn't do that stuff against Canada. And they really couldn't do that stuff earlier in the window as well. They weren't very effective with their ball movement. They didn't always play a lot of smart passes. They would go too direct, but not in a really productive way that would open up gaps and present opportunities for second balls. Against Canada, it was way too many forced diagonal balls out to the wing without doing the first part of that step, without actually shifting Canada to one side and then playing the diagonal. It was like you were just trying to jump into speaking a foreign language without ever actually learning it, and you just started speaking gibberish, right? So some of those things really need to be cleaned up for the U.S., and I think those that ball movement with purpose and with intentionality and speed, those are really important things that the U.S. is going to have to display, both against Jamaica and in other games in this window.
Yeah, because in some of those games in the last round, we would see the like kind of big switch too early and it would be overhit or it would be sort of just a little bit misplayed. But we would also see the U.S. sort of work it from one side to the other. And then you could see like one Mississippi later, oh, right, I'm supposed to show. And then you'd see some movement. Then you'd see some people moving to try to support. But at that point, the opponent is able to cover, they're able to track things. You're not really discombobulating them. You're not making it difficult for them to know what's going on in the moment. A little thing I saw a lot of from Costa Rica were just dummies. There were just a ton of dummies in and around the Jamaica box. And I'm not saying the U.S. needs to be especially flashy, but I think anything you can do to throw off that sort of static defensive approach, if that's what Jamaica are doing, it's going to help you. And so if there is a sort of overlapping run that like is played in and then the ball's cut back and somebody dummies that and it goes to Tyler Adams at the top of the box and he then spreads it wide to Serginho Dest, who's advancing in like two passes that involve four different players, but only two people on the ball, you suddenly have basically opened up Jamaica. You've made them sort of shift everybody on the fly, and that allows for those gaps to open up. It allows for 1v1 improvisation if you want to go that way. But I agree with you that too often we saw the United States sort of passing, putting a foot on it, passing, putting a foot on it, and then an individual trying to beat somebody to make something happen, getting stuck, and now you're open to the counter, and that's basically exactly what a team sitting in a bunker want you to do. So I want to see the U.S., to your point, moving the ball quickly, but with sort of intent and with ideas behind it, but still taking some gambles here and there, rolling the dice a little bit, but never leaving themselves wide open to a counterattack.
And one thing I'll add to that, Taylor, in addition to ball movement, another really good way to break through a low block is to have players who can drop their shoulder, get on the ball, drop their shoulder, and then beat a man on the dribble, right? And Christian Pulisic can do that a lot. He's the best dribbler in this pool, hands down. But at times, and we talked about this plenty, at times he was dominating the ball too much and sacrificing the open pass to continue his dribble, which just doesn't make sense in a lot of cases. He's not in this camp. But there are other players that are brought into this group that weren't in the September window and weren't in the camp in September who can drop their shoulder and break through defensive lines. And Greg Velasquez on the Scuff podcast, who's been on this show now, which is beautiful, he's been doing some talking about this idea, specifically with, I think, Yunus Musa and maybe Luca De La Torre is being brought in as well. I would say both of those guys can do this thing. Taylor, you and I have seen Yunus Musa so many times do this for Valencia, where he gets on the ball, he drops his shoulder, and he just glides.
The maneuver.
The Musa maneuver, right? He glides past three, four, five players in La Liga, and then maybe the final product is lacking here, and he's playing in a weird spot with Valencia, and he has been dating back to last season. But players like Musa and Luca De La Torre, who are smooth on the ball, who can drop their shoulder, get on the ball, and glide forward, and instead of breaking lines with passing, they can break lines with dribbling and break blocks that way. And I think that's going to be an asset for the U.S. in this window. I don't know how much of an asset it's going to be, and I do still have doubts about how the U.S.'s sixes and eights can actually help progress the ball with passing. But I don't think we should overlook how much value a player like Musa or De La Torre or even McKennie in the right situation, how much value they can provide to help the U.S. move the ball and look dangerous in possession with their ability on the ball, on the dribble.
And when I think of the Musa maneuver, which I do love, and I believe credit to you, Joe, for coming up with that phrase, it's usually with somebody either on his back or on his hip as he's turning or trying to run with him while he's on the ball. And that feels like what will be the case against Jamaica, that there's going to be somebody on or around him that will be trying to like make him uncomfortable, make him play the ball back, make him hold it up. And I think that I picture him sort of turning there and kind of riding that challenge or bodying somebody. Maybe he fouls, maybe he draws a foul. But either way, I think that predictable unpredictability is what the United States needs from a player in that position playing that role. I don't know if Musa will start. I would like him to start. But I think there are certain strengths to him going in there and playing the way he wants to play and making some of those runs, again, when the situation calls for it, when it seems like it's the right time, as opposed to trying to do it every time. And I think he is usually pretty good about that. So I'm with you on that one. Joe, any other potential opportunities you've seen from the Jamaica side of things? We've talked a lot about what they might do defensively. We've talked a little bit about how they like to attack. I would say my basic feeling, even with the way things went last round of qualifying, the United States coming away with 5 points there, they're in a fine position right now. They're in third in the table ahead of Panama, not even on goal difference. I think it's on goals scored and Jamaica bottom. So I think the U.S. should be feeling confident. I think we should be expecting a win, certainly on home soil. That makes things all the better. But I think there are still threats there, certainly. We've talked about Mikel Antonio. I talked about what I think Shamar Nicholson could do. And we haven't even mentioned Andre Gray, who's in there. Jamal Lowe, 27-year-old for Bournemouth, scored in his debut for Jamaica. He's another one who can bring a lot of flair, can bring a lot of danger to the Jamaica attack. So there are certainly weapons there if the U.S. is caught out, if the U.S. isn't sort of ready to deal with those possibilities. But I think if they are, then there are tons of opportunities to go at Jamaica's defense and make Jamaica uncomfortable and basically kind of starve those attackers of like opportunities in and around the U.S. goal, or I guess in and around the U.S. box. If they're in the goal, something else has happened. But yeah, I think basically there are threats there, but the United States can neutralize those by keeping the ball, by making Jamaica sit deeper and deeper and deeper, and never really letting them get into any sort of flow state where they can play and pass and move and kind of get into a rhythm. If the U.S. can knock them around early, I think they can keep knocking them. And I will say that if the U.S. scores a goal, I weirdly, this is really, really weird. I don't want them to score in the first like 10 minutes because we've often seen the U.S. then back off a bit if they score really, really early. But I would love to see the United States score inside the first maybe 10 to 20 minutes in that window, because I think then we'll see Jamaica push for it, try to make something happen. And that tends to be when they get carved apart, when they leave themselves really open, is when they're trying to push for a goal, push for an equalizer, get their way back into a game. So plenty of opportunities, I think, for the United States, but we haven't talked much about the personnel or the lineup or things, other things we'd like to see. Joe, shall we do that in our final segment of today's episode?
Oh, let's do, Taylor.
Okay.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
All right, Joe Lowry, we are back. I know you and Tom talked about your rosters, you and mustachioed, well-coiffed Tom. I'm bringing it back. Joe, any other specific things that you could see the United States trying to do when we come to Jamaica's approach or what Jamaica might want to do?
I guess to close, I can see the U.S. trying to take advantage of the inherent gaps that are there when Jamaica actually have possession. I mentioned earlier how it's not super structured when they're in possession, Jamaica. There's opportunities for the U.S. to take advantage of turnovers and then exploit the weird spacing that Jamaica has. They don't always have really well put together rest defense, and rest defense is kind of a tactical term that means your shape when you lose the ball, right? A lot of modern soccer is based around transitions, and so teams don't just prepare for transitions after they've lost the ball. They start preparing for them even before they've lost the ball, or at least they should. Jamaica, in what I've seen, doesn't do the best job of that. They'll lose the ball and there'll be these big gaps around the turnover area. And that allows other teams to just attack right through that. That Panama did exactly that. They won a ball in midfield and just knifed right through Jamaica for one of their goals in that 3-0 win for Panama in September. There's chances for the U.S. to do that. There's chances for the U.S. to fight and win those second balls after Jamaica plays direct and then counterattack into space. They're going to have dangerous counterattacking players, the U.S. will, in this window with Aronson, with Tim Weah, guys that will get in behind, get on the ball, drive it forward, and then cause problems for Jamaica in the box. So those are a couple of other things that could result from Jamaica's possession player, their attacking movements. There are going to be opportunities that stem from what Jamaica's doing with the ball that could give the U.S. a bit of a boost in this game.
All right, well then let's talk about that U.S. team or the U.S. team we would like to see. Joe, we usually do a sort of combination of what we think Berhalter will do and then what we would like him to do. I've maybe leaned a little bit more into what I want him to do, but one area we might disagree on to start is in goal, because I am with you that Matt Turner has earned the starting job, in my opinion, but if we still have, I don't know where Panama is on the red list situation. I don't know if Zach Steffen is allowed to travel, so there's an idea there that maybe Steffen starts this first game because he's not going to be with the team in Panama, so then it's Matt Turner from there on out. On the flip side, it could be Matt Turner in this game, Matt Turner in the second game, Zach Steffen in the third. It might be Matt Turner in all three, but that's the kind of only way I see Zach Steffen starting this one. And if he does, I won't be reading too much into it for that reason. So I wanted to get that out there early and then say I still think it should be Matt Turner, just so I don't upset you too much.
I appreciate that. I do think it will be Matt Turner in this first game. And I think from what I have read, that the COVID restrictions for that middle game of the window will be relaxed and that everybody will be allowed to travel. I was really trying to find a concrete bit of information about that earlier today before we recorded. I could not, so obviously take that with a grain of salt. I just don't think you really need to worry about rotating these goalkeepers too much. I asked Tom about that, and he basically said he wouldn't be surprised to see it go either way with either one of Turner or Steffen starting pretty much any of these games, if I remember correctly. I mean, goalkeepers aren't running a lot. Unless Matt Turner gets hurt, I don't see a huge need to start Steffen. But like you're saying, Taylor, I wouldn't be surprised to see some back and forth, whether that's due to COVID restrictions in international travel or just because Berhalter still isn't fully set on Matt Turner being the starting goalkeeper.
All right. And then ahead of Matt Turner, my assumption is that we will see a back four because that's what we've played against Jamaica previously and because the back three really did not work in that first half against Honduras. And I think it sort of picks itself. I have it as Robinson, Richards, Robinson, and Dest, Anthony Robinson, just to be very clear, on the left, Serginho Dest on the right, Miles Robinson at right center back, and I have Chris Richards at left center back. Other options would be Mark McKenzie and Walker Zimmerman. I thought it might be Tim Ream until I realized that he wasn't on this roster, and that makes that much more unlikely. You and Tom were discussing if it would be Brooks in there. Obviously, it will not be due to that back injury. So I'm guessing it's Richards Robinson. Maybe it's Zimmerman. Maybe it's McKenzie. Joe, what about you?
I'm guessing the same thing you're guessing, Taylor. The fullbacks seem to be easier to me than the center backs. Serginho Dest on the right and Anthony Robinson on the left just makes the most sense. There are other fullback options here. George Bello, Shaq Moore, and DeAndre Yedlin. But I just don't see those guys leaping over Dest and Robinson in that depth chart for the first game. Center backs, I think it should absolutely 100% be Miles Robinson and Chris Richards based off of form, based off of those two players' relative abilities compared to Mark McKenzie and Walker Zimmerman. I really like those two center backs, Richards and Miles Robinson. I would not be surprised at the same time if Chris Richards didn't start this game. He's not a player that Berhalter is overly familiar with on a personal level, at least as far as we can tell. This will be his second camp with the U.S. men's national team. Mark McKenzie's had more time under Berhalter, and I don't think Mark McKenzie is the level of center back that Chris Richards is, but it would not surprise me to see McKenzie start next to Miles Robinson in this first game if Berhalter doesn't feel like Richards is ready to go. I think that would be a mistake, to be clear, but you know, there's a few of these situations where I can see what Berhalter might do, even if it's not exactly the center back pairing that I would opt for.
Yeah, and I think that's well said, because that's sort of why I like doing these shows, is not to say, like, here's what he should do, otherwise they're not going to win, but to look at what we would like to see happen, but also to look at what he might do, why he might not do that, and why. And I think you're absolutely right that Chris Richards coming in might not be ready. There might be that lack of familiarity. You might not want to throw him in right away, whereas you have McKenzie and Zimmerman, who both have plenty of experience. So maybe you let them start. You see how camps progress, and you give Richards some minutes here and there. Maybe he starts the next game. But I won't be too disappointed either way. Weirdly, I wouldn't be too disappointed if Shaq Moore started. I would much prefer Serginho Dest, but the reason for that, why I wouldn't be so bummed is because I took a look, as I said, back at the USA-Jamaica game from the Gold Cup and realized that I believe 8 of the 11 starters from that game are in this squad. We had Sam Vines, who's obviously injured at left back, Shaq Moore at right back, Miles Robinson and James Sands were your two center backs. The midfield three was Leggett, Acosta, and Busio. And then your more attacking three were Hoppy, Daryl Dike, and Paul Areola, Matt Turner in goal. So that's where, if it is Shaq Moore, maybe that's why. Maybe he has priors with Jamaica, but I still think it's probably going to be Dest on the right and Anthony Robinson on the left, and maybe Robinson scores some more in-step goals and all is right with the world. I'm also, this is where more like what I would like to see. I am assuming it will be Tyler Adams as that lone pivot, and what I would like to see is Weston McKennie ahead of him and Yunus Musah also ahead of him. I wouldn't be surprised if it was Tyler Adams with Acosta and Sebastian Leggett. That would make some sense to me, and I don't think Berhalter is still dwelling on the Weston McKennie COVID situation. It sounds like from your conversation with Tom, he is not, but maybe there's just that final little bit of punishment. I think that would be a bit much. I'm excited to not have to talk about that anymore. Yeah. So I do think it's Adams. I do think it's McKennie. I'm less sure about who that other midfielder might be.
Yeah, this is Taylor. I'm in almost the exact same spot as you here. You named my preferred midfield three with Adams at the six and McKennie and Musah ahead of him. I really want to see Musah start because I think, well, we've already talked about why. He's got that quality on the ball to deal with a player on his back and drive forward and break through a defense that way. And I think that could be huge for the U.S. in this game and in this window. But like you're saying, Kellen Acosta would not surprise me if he starts as one of those eights. Even Luca De La Torre or Gianluca Busio wouldn't shock me. Not especially likely, I don't think. But those guys could get a start. Leggett starting would not surprise me at all. Christian Roldan starting would be a big surprise to me because I think Berhalter prefers him as, he calls him solutions, but one of those substitutes off the bench trying to change the game later on in a match. So, I mean, of those players we named, it would not shock me if any of them started outside of Tyler Adams being displaced by one of those guys. But at the end of the day, I'd like to see that Adams, McKennie, Musah trio, because I don't think we – shoot, man, have we seen it before? I cannot remember. Maybe it happened towards the end of 2020 in one of those European friendlies, but we haven't seen it much, certainly, if we've seen it at all.
Yeah, I can't remember if we have if we have from the start. We've certainly seen Sebastian Leggett start as one of those midfield roles. We've seen Christian Roldan in there as well. I sort of have both of them as almost like break glass in case of emergency comfort blanket. Like if we need people to come in and sort of do the basic things that Berhalter wants this team to do and to do them well, you bring them in to basically just make things run a bit more smoothly if things aren't working. I would rather have them be the sort of calming presences in the second half rather than starting with them. Again, I won't be too disappointed either way, but I would really like it to be Musah, Weston McKennie, and Tyler Adams, just because I think that trio causes a lot of chaos for Jamaica, doesn't present as much chaos for the U.S. defense, and is just capable of scrapping, is capable of battling and fighting for balls, but then keeping possession and playing the technical side as well. I think it gives us a lot of positives. Any mentions for Busio or Luca De La Torre? I don't expect either to start. Maybe both will get minutes. Maybe neither will get minutes. But I think Busio is probably in there for the Gold Cup experience and for maybe what he's been doing in Serie A. Luca De La Torre is one that you and I have talked about previously in our Americans Abroad roundups. We haven't talked about him as much lately, but it is exciting to see him there. Always good to see more faces brought in to get more opportunities with the team.
First of all, I was wrong about Musah, McKennie, Adams. We did see them start together against Wales previously in a friendly over in Europe. So you guys can delete those tweets. I have atoned for my sin in naming that fact. About Busio and Luca De La Torre, maybe I'm just a miser, Taylor. We've talked about Busio a lot on this show, and Adam Snavely and I did a show last week with some USMNT listener questions, and we talked about Busio and how we would be surprised if he was called up anytime soon to the national team. And then literally the next day, Greg Berhalter calls him up and compliments the work he's been doing in Serie A. And a lot of the things that Busio has been doing in Serie A have been good, but I still just don't fully see it yet. He's shown glimpses with the national team at the Gold Cup. It hasn't been super consistent there. It still hasn't been super consistent at club level. I still see a lot of flaws in his game. I'd love to be proven wrong over and over again about Busio, and I will happily eat my words down the line. I don't see him playing a majorly effective role in this camp. Luca De La Torre, somewhat the same. I think he brings a lot of qualities that Busio just doesn't, and qualities that a lot of other players don't. He's smooth on the ball. He's a connector in midfield, and I think the U.S. could use that. So of those two players, Busio and De La Torre, I'd rather see De La Torre be more involved in this camp.
All right. So we'll see what happens with that midfield. And then the front three, assuming it's a 4-3-3, a little bit more open than I expected and a little bit more opportunity for experimentation, for me at least, I think. But Joe, what do you make of your options here? It does seem like it's probably Pepe and Zardes would be the two candidates to start in the number nine spot. And I won't be surprised if it's Zardes. I would prefer it to be Ricardo Pepe just to kind of keep it going and see what he's capable of. Yeah, in another game, maybe he keeps scoring. Maybe we see that drop off that we sometimes see with that kind of that number nine who scores the big goal and he's the next big thing. And then there's maybe a coming back down to earth. Maybe there won't be for Pepe. But either way, I think it's worth kind of seeing what he can do from the start and then seeing how he progresses with this team over these three games.
I think you have to ride the hot hand, right, Taylor? We've talked about that before. Pepe is the hot nine right now. And not that he will always be, and not that there aren't going to be growing pains. But, I mean, he scored that goal against Honduras and was very good in that second half. I think you want to continue that momentum, or at least put Pepe in a position where he can continue that momentum and continue to impact this team's attacking play. So I would start Pepe at the nine over Zardes. It would not surprise me, again, like with the center back situation. It would not surprise me if we saw Zardes. In looking at the wings, it wouldn't surprise me if we see Paul Areola start on the right or even on the left, but I'd expect him to play on the right if he is in that lineup. Tom and I both had Brendan Aaronson and Tim Weah as our preferred starting wingers, and those still are my preferred starting wingers. I think they're better players than Paul Areola is from a pure talent and ability standpoint. But Paul Areola has some defensive chops that Berhalter really likes. He's also a guy that Berhalter knows really well. And so it would not shock me one bit if we see Paul Areola start on the right and Brendan Aaronson or Tim Weah start on the left with Zardes or Pepe as the nine. There's a lot of different combinations here, Taylor, and some that I'd prefer certainly over others. But the good thing about this group is they have the talent pretty much no matter who's on the field. If it's Zach Steffen in goal, weird rotations along the back line, different stuff in midfield and along the forward line, as long as players are in spots where they're comfortable and can be effective, which is not always what we saw in the last window in September, as long as players are being put in spots where they can succeed, the talent should be here where the U.S. can get results almost no matter who is on the field.
Yeah, I think that's a positive way to look at it, and I feel like the need to drive that home before I then say there is a combination that I think I would like to see.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And it's not one that I think we will end up seeing. I feel like if we're kind of going with a combination of past as precedent with what maybe gets the best out of this team, I think you're right. It's probably Brendan Aaronson and Timothy Weah on the wings. When I broke it down by position, I had your sort of left wing options as Aaronson and Hoppe, your right wing options as Weah and Paul Areola. But I think it might make sense to have Matthew Hoppe on the left and Brendan Aaronson on the right.
I'm here for it.
Because Hoppe in that Gold Cup did that sort of left wing, but really more of a support striker slash other number 10, dropping in centrally and creating overloads. He did it really well and did it really consistently and was moving off the ball all the time, was running every single where, scrapped for everything. And I kind of like that. And then it lets Brendan Aaronson do similar things on the right side. I haven't seen Tim Weah enough this season due to injury and just not watching a ton of Lille to know how much he's able to do those things. I think it probably, again, is Tim Weah on the right, but I do know that Paul Areola, I think, doesn't really give you the technical precision that we've talked about needing in this game. So I wouldn't mind if it was Hoppe and Aaronson. I wouldn't mind if it was Hoppe and Weah or Aaronson and Weah, but I agree with you overall that either way, it should be the United States causing problems, getting goals, and looking confident and competent.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be more than happy to see Hoppe start. And really, any combination of these wingers. Paul Arriola is the guy that I'm least excited about, but that's just because I think we know the most about him at this point, right? He's the oldest of those four winger options. So it's fun to see young guys. It's fun to see new players. But really, any combination of those guys, I think, is going to be fine. Matthew Hoppe, I will add, had a lot of good moments in the Gold Cup, also had a lot of moments where you were like, oh, yeah, yep. He's raw, right? He's new. He's new to this whole professional soccer thing, which is true. He is, right? Hugely talented player, can already do a lot of things well at the professional level, but sometimes tried too many things, sometimes tried too much stuff and lost the ball in bad spots. And so I'm curious, because I think we will see him in this window at some point with the relative lack of options up front. Not that that's a problem, but it's going to happen that these guys are rotated in and out. I'm excited to see how Hoppe develops, and I think he can make a lot of strides in this window. But yeah, Taylor, I'd be fine with Matthew Hoppe on the left, Aronson on the right. I'd be fine with almost any combo of these attacking players.
Man, it's funny that you say that, because I go back and look at those notes again, and that game is remembered as Hoppe scoring the winner and just like creating so much... like so many problems basically for Jamaica. But a lot of my notes are Holden noting that Hoppe is gassed inside the first 15 minutes of the start of the second half, and how he's been making a ton of runs, but maybe that has made him tired. There's another note about Hoppe giving the ball away and how he's turning it over centrally, which shows his inexperience. So maybe you're right then, Joe, that this is a game for Brendan Aaronson to come in and sort of execute the game plan. Maybe I feel like it's probably Paul Arriola to come in and execute the game plan. And he scrapped for everything. He worked hard. I have a couple different positive notes about Paul Arriola earning corners and chasing down balls. I don't have a ton about him being good in possession. So in the end, I'm going to say Aaronson, Pepe, and Wea would be my preferred front three for this game.
And that's an exciting trio, right? It's a big loss, and maybe this has been under-discussed, I don't really know, but it's a big loss, we mentioned it already at least, that Gio Reyna and Christian Pulisic aren't here, right? That's a massive loss. Gio Reyna in particular, I think, I just am in love with how he plays soccer, and I think he's brilliant. I think he's the best player that the U.S. has, and Tyler Adams is probably in that discussion, but Gio Reyna's been available more than Adams has, certainly. Missing those two wingers, Reyna and Pulisic, is a huge loss, but it does say something about the state of the pool and the betterment of the U.S.'s talent pool, that there are guys that we believe can come in and do this job and that clearly Greg Berhalter believes in as well, right? Wea and Hoppe and Arriola and specifically Brendan Aaronson, all of those guys have the ability to come in and change the game, maybe Arriola in a different way, as we've already kind of discussed. There's talent here, right? And that should be encouraging, even without two of the best players that the U.S. has in the pool. This squad still has the ability to go out and get results, and now it's time for them to show that they actually have that ability and just do it.
But we are on the same page, Joe, that we're both expecting and hoping for all 3 points and a confident win.
I mean, yeah, absolutely, right? It's time to get results, and if the results can come from a more tactically sound, smooth type of win, all the better. I'm not necessarily expecting that, although I do believe that it could happen in a game like this with how poor Jamaica have been. This is a game where you need a result, right? That should be the expectation against Jamaica in Austin. It's a home game against a team that's struggling and still trying to find themselves in CONCACAF. This should be 3 points, and it doesn't all the way need to be 3 points, right? This is not the sports talk hot take kind of thing, but it really should, and it would be great for the U.S. if it did.
Yeah, and with that in mind, I think also I am almost as happy with a 1-0 win as I am with a 4 or 5-1 win, because that 4 or 5-1 win could be against a Jamaica team that are really wide open and are easy to kind of pick apart and find space. And if the U.S. scores in that, like in the 16th minute, let's say, and then add a couple, like one more before halftime, and then Jamaica are kind of pushing for it, that tells us that the United States can basically carve apart an opponent like that. But if it's a 1-0 win where the U.S. has to sort of find a way through, and they do so successfully by incorporating some of the keys to this game or things to keep an eye on that we've discussed, then that is also a very positive step, that they're able to kind of go against a bunkered team who are trying to frustrate and still end up getting the result. That's what you want to see, even if it's not like completely comprehensively inspiring or impressive. It's still the result you need against a team that definitely don't want you to get that result. And so either way, I think I will be pretty happy, provided it's a win.
Yep, I'm right there with you, Taylor.
All right, Joe. Well, we've got some things to keep an eye on. I have 7 of them. Maybe I'll tweet them out after we finish recording, but I've got keep an eye on Jamaica's defensive approach early and where they're sort of drawing their lines. How much space is there between those lines would be the second one. Who's more up for loose balls and 50-50s? How quickly is the ball moving when the U.S. is in possession, specifically from side to side? How much off the ball movement is there from the United States? What can the U.S. do to exploit space when Jamaica turn the ball over when they're in possession? And the final one would just be how much individuality is the United States reliant upon? Is it Serginho Dest trying to take people on 1v1 over and over and over again? Is it Matthew Hoppe doing that? If so, I don't think that that's means the U.S. game plan is working, because I doubt that's a thing that they had game planned for. So those would be my seven things to keep an eye on to understand what's happening in this game.
Taylor, way to be the scribe, the TSS scribe. That's a list that I'm proud of. I think that's a good list. Thanks for noting those things down. You just made my life a lot easier.
There we go, man. There we go. That's my goal. And see, Tom doesn't do that. He might have a mustache, but he doesn't do that. Joe Lowry, I look forward to talking with you about this game on Thursday evening. I'm not going to commit us to a quick take hot take, but we leave that possibility open, especially because we have a relatively early kickoff. I'm really grateful it's not a 10 p.m. kickoff.
Yes,
I will
yes.
say, having been on the West Coast, I still like do my like group messaging and stuff at the same time. It's just weird because then I keep wondering why no one is responding, and then I remember it's like 1 or 2 a.m. on the East Coast. But the sports thing, Joe, it's not fun to wake up at like 4 a.m. for a Premier League kickoff, but like NFL starting at 10 a.m., I have no problems with that. And yeah, just being able to sort of like watch a night game and then still have the night ahead of you. It's pretty great. It's pretty great, I have to say.
It's phenomenal. The domestic soccer scheduling here on the West Coast is perfect, and I would not change a thing. I did complain a little bit about those late starts because I don't know, I'm kind of weak. I don't like to stay up super late. So the late starts in September weren't my favorite thing, but 4:30, 3 p.m. and 4 p.m. kickoffs are roughly those times. That is beautiful. The challenge just does come when we're talking about Liverpool City or whatever, and it's on at 5 a.m. That's not my favorite thing, Taylor, but you know. Pluses and minuses here.
Pluses and minuses indeed. Joe Lowry, thank you so much for talking about USA Jamaica with me today.
Yeah, absolutely. Taylor, it's so good to have you back, man.
It's very good to be back, man. Listeners, hopefully you all agree. Thank you all very much for listening, and we will talk to you all again very soon.